OEA, OEA. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session. Pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order in which they will be presented, they are as follows. Diamond Shamrock Refining and Marketing Company versus Nueces County Appraisal District and the Appraisal Review Board of the Nueces County Appraisal District from Nueces County. City of San Antonio versus Abraham and Alicia Rodriguez from Bexar County. And International Armament Corporation et al. Versus the Honorable John C. Martin on original mandamus proceeding. In each of these matters, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The relator or petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of our court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and will complete these arguments before the noon break. Counsel are advised that these arguments are being recorded for the court's convenience. If you desire to listen to a tape of the court's argument, you may make application with the clerk of our court. Court is now ready to hear argument from petitioner in Diamond Shamrock versus Nueces County Appraisal District.
Mr. Edward Ford III is representing the petitioner. He has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, my name is Edward Fleaver, and I'm here on behalf of Diamond Shamrock Refining and Marketing Company petitioner in this cause. The Corpus Christi Court of Appeals held that foreign oil owned by the petitioner while in transit through the Nueces County Appraisal District to its refinery in Live Oak County, Texas, is subject to taxation within the Nueces County Appraisal District. In reversing the trial court, a bare majority of the Court of Appeals en banc ignored longstanding legal precedents of the United States Supreme Court and this court. Further, in reaching its decision, the court below also found a fact contrary to the facts stipulated by the parties. And finally, the court ignored an independent supporting ground that the trial court relied on, which ground was not raised by the Nueces County Appraisal District in its appellate brief until that omission was pointed out by the petitioner in its appellate brief. Each of these errors require reversal of the Court of Appeals judgment by this court. This case involves oil moving in transit through the Nueces County Appraisal District and the attempt by the Appraisal District to place it on its appraisal roll for the years 1988, 1989, and 1990.
Is Texas the ultimate destination of the oil?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
No question about it.
No question about it. In its present form, Your Honor. Suit was filed by the petitioner asserting two causes of action, that this oil was exempt from taxation under either the Import-Export Clause or the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution, or both. The most relevant, the case was tried on stipulations, the most relevant of which are stipulations 4, 5, 6, and 7. The facts, as stated in stipulation number 4, are that the crude oil at issue originates totally from foreign sources and is transmitted by ships through the Gulf of Mexico to the Harbor Island Storage Facility located within the Nueces County Appraisal District as part of an incident to the transportation of the crude oil to its ultimate destination outside the Nueces County Appraisal District. The presence of the crude oil within the Nueces County Appraisal District while in transit to its ultimate destination is reasonably necessary for the accommodation of the transportation of the crude oil into two pipelines owned by American Petrofina, and then the oil is transported onto Live Oak County.
Mr. Cleaver, let me ask a question. Let's assume, under the facts, that the oil is warehoused at the Harbor Island facility until it's ready to be used, and then it's transported to a pipeline, and it's set up to wherever it goes to get processed. But because they can't be stored on site where it's being processed, it in fact is being warehoused in Harbor Island. Is it your position that the 400,000 barrels of oil that are in Harbor Island can never be taxed, or are you just saying they can't be taxed at Corpus Christi?
Our position, Your Honor, is that if it's warehoused, as that has been defined by the Supreme Court in Michelin, I believe this oil would be taxable. Our position is that the stipulation and undisputed facts in this case are that it's not being warehoused, that the only reason it's in those tanks in Nueces County is to await its transportation by pipeline on the Three Rivers.
Okay, then is it your position that this oil can be taxed somewhere in Texas, it just can't be taxed at Corpus Christi?
It's our position, Your Honor, that this oil, the oil that was there on January 1st in Nueces County, is totally exempt from taxation.
Totally exempt?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so this...
Let me modify that. If something happened to reach its final destination, Lytle County, it would become taxed.
Well, I guess my question is this. The Three Island, what is the refining place called?
Three Rivers.
Three Rivers does not have storage capacity for all the oil that it processes. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, it has 200,000 barrel storage capacity. Yes.
But to keep it fully functioning, it requires on an additional 400,000 barrels from Harbor Island of oil.
Well, to keep it functioning, it requires a continuous flow of oil.
Okay, and so now, in order to have this continuous flow of oil, if it does 50,000 barrels a day and it has only a 200,000 barrel capacity, it'll only function 4 days a week. But if you function 5 days a week, you've got to find 50,000 barrels someplace else to process, right?
That'd be correct. But
now, if what you're saying, if you can't tax the 400,000 barrels at Harbor Island, and on January 1st, on any given year at Three Rivers, you're only going to have 200,000 barrels, then there's 400,000 barrels of oil that never gets taxed. Isn't that right?
That's correct. Because, Your Honor.
So it's your position that the 400,000 barrels at Corpus Christi is never taxed?
Any oil that would be located in Corpus Christi on January 1st, that part of the stipulation that is moving in transit would not be taxed on Corpus Christi. That's correct.
If the tax were imposed by the state board and the state had more taxation, there isn't one, because there's no state having more tax, could they tax the oil that Nueces County?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because it's in transit and it's protected under the Import-Export Clause and the Commerce Clause from taxation.
Why hasn't it come to rest within the taxing authority, which is Texas?
Because, Your Honor, the case is whole beginning with Henderson Clayton, which is a Texas case involving cotton being shipped out of Houston, Texas to other states. The transit begins at the point of origin and it ends at the point of ultimate destination. The point of ultimate destination in this case, Your Honor, is Lytle County. It is not Nueces County.
And well, why can't you say that the point of ultimate destination is the state of Texas?
Your Honor, the Supreme Court has dealt with that issue on numerous occasions. As a matter of fact, going back over 100 years, time after time, the United States Supreme Court has held that goods in transit are exempt from taxation under Import-Export or Commerce Clause, and they're exempt from the time they begin their journey in the stream of commerce to the time that they ultimately reach it. There are several cases dealing with situations, for instance, the Youngstown case, where you had, well, in companion cases, you had ore coming into the state of Ohio, going to a mill, and then you had plywood coming into the state of Wisconsin. And in both cases, the petitioner was arguing before the United States Supreme Court that those goods were exempt because they had not entered the mill yet. They were sitting outside in a big pot. And the court held, no, the transit had ended because you're right there, you're at the mill. If the law was, once you crossed into Ohio, or once you crossed into the state of Wisconsin, that you lose the exemption, then there would be no need to reach that distinction. Even Michelin, where the tires go into Gwinnett County across multiple counties, they held that they were warehoused, and the specific holding of the court, the petitioner's tires were no longer in transit because they were in a warehouse and they were distributed. So the time they reached that warehouse, they were still exempt from taxation, even though they were in the state of ultimate destination.
Why does the federal government care? Why would the Commerce Clause or the Import-Export Clause bear upon what county in Texas within a single state decided to levy a tax? I mean, why would it violate any federal constitutional, either of those federal constitutional clauses, if every county along the way?
Your Honor, the United States Supreme Court, over the past 7 decades, has dealt with the issue of goods moving in transit.
But can you point to any case where there was a question about what county or what municipality within a single state should levy a tax? And that was dealt with by the U.S. Supreme Court on Commerce Clause or Import-Export Clause.
There is no case that directly deals with that specific issue. However, the cases, when you look at Reynolds and when you look at Youngstown, when you look at Michelin, have clearly held that the location of ultimate destination is the determining factor. And this court, in the City of Farmers Branch versus Massachusetts, recognized the rule, and I'll just quote page 453 of that opinion, that we understand the holding of Michelin to be that where the tax is not on the importation or movement of goods, of imported goods, and where the goods are no longer in transit, the goods are subject to the imposition of non-discriminatory ad valorem property taxation by the states and their subdivisions. And in this case, Your Honor, the goods are still in transit, and as such, they are not subject to taxation by this court's rule, by the state, or any of its subdivisions.
Counsel, I believe the pause in transit was about 3 days, is that right, that they were held there at the Harbor Island? Average of 3 days?
No, Your Honor, in 1988, it was approximately 12 days. In 1988, it ranged from 12 to 25 days, depending on the year.
Or 12 days. What does the statute have to say about when it ceases to be in transit? Could they pause for 30 days and continue to be in transit?
Judge, the test is whether or not the interruption in transit is for a business purpose, whether or not it's incidental to the accommodation of transit.
So they could be there 6 months, then the oil could be in the tank 6 months and still be in transit?
Theoretically, that would be correct, Judge. In this case,
what is the difference? What's the test of whether or not it's...
The test, Judge, as this court stated in the case of Z-Walt, the test is whether, if the interruptions are only to promote a safe or convenient transit, then the continuity of the interstate trip is not broken. That's the test. Now, the number of days I submit to this court could be a consideration. If it's sitting there for 2 years, as in Reynolds in the United States Supreme Court case, and they're arguing it's still in transit, that tobacco is aging, certainly that's a consideration that a court can look at and say, well, is this a business purpose or is this a accommodation of transit? I submit to the court that with the stipulation we have, the undisputed fact is that the interruption in transit here was merely because it comes off a tanker, it's put in tanks, and those pipelines can only accommodate so much oil at one time.
So because of the stipulation, this pump was not an issue?
Well, we didn't deal with an issue until the Court of Appeals found a fact that was totally contrary to the stipulation, holding that the oil was in storage, which is one of our points of error, that the Court of Appeals simply ignored the stipulation, and which, as this court is aware, courts are uniform in holding that stipulations are binding not only on the parties in the trial court, but on the review court as well.
Regarding
no contention in this case that this is a tariff, a tax imposed in Nueces County.
The United States Supreme Court could hold that this could be a tariff because if it's a tax on the movement of the goods itself.
But you clearly recognize that this is an ad valorem tax imposed on anybody who has property in the county.
We do not deny that this is a non-discriminatory property tax.
Why do the United States or any other state care that if the property has come to rest in Texas somewhere, which one of Texas jurisdictions taxes?
Your Honor, the issue is greater than just the state of Texas. The United States Supreme Court, in interpreting the Import-Export Clause and the Commerce Clause, has recognized the absolute necessity of the free flow of goods across this country. And because of that, they have held that the test that you look at is not necessarily what state is in, but has it left its point of origin, is it still in the stream of commerce, and has it reached its point of ultimate destination? That's the test. And the fact that it may simply have crossed into the state of ultimate destination, theoretically you could have cars that enter Texas at Waxman in East Texas and travel all the way to El Paso, and I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of miles that is, but they would still be in interstate commerce, even though they're in the state of ultimate destination, which in size is many times larger than most states.
That's more than taxes are imposed on materials or property in place on the 1st of January each year. Are they standing taxes?
Yes, sir. The tax is levied as of January 1st, with the exception of inventory, where an inventory taxpayer can choose September 1st.
In order to be construed as charitable, it's only taxes that which is in place one day a year.
That's correct.
If Diamond Shamrock added storage tanks in Live Oak County, there's no question that this ad valorem tax would be imposed by Live Oak County. Is that correct?
Under the Youngstown ruling, that would be correct, sir, even though they're not in the... But
because Diamond Shamrock has its storage tanks in New Athens County, you're arguing that it cannot be taxed. So it's totally different from that ad valorem tax that one day a year.
Your Honor, just for the record, these are not, and this is another point, these are not tanks owned by Diamond Shamrock. These are famous tanks, and while they are, quote, storage tanks, that's not the issue. The issue is whether or not the oil in the tanks is in storage. And if by stipulation it's not, it's
not in the pipeline. It's
continually moving, Judge. But the point is, you can't get 400,000 barrels of oil into a 36-inch pipeline all at one time. And that's what, in the Hughes case, and with the timber moving down the river and had to wait for the barges to come get it, in the Anderson Clayton case where it's sitting at the port and it had to wait for the ships to come get it, in this case, we got it sitting in storage tanks waiting for the pipeline to come get it.
Counsel, your grounds of your case is in stipulation number 9, is that right?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
The grounds of your complaint is in one of the stipulations.
It's primarily stipulation number 4.
Oh, I don't have the numbers in front of me now, but you made a stipulation that says that you protest the inclusion of the property on the appraisal rolls on the ground that such property was not subject to ad valorem taxation in Texas for tax years 1988, 89, and 1990. Does this mean, are you protesting any tax in Texas? That's not what I'm hearing you say.
What we're protesting is the ad valorem tax. If this oil was subject to some other type of state tax.
But you don't protest an ad valorem tax in Live Oak County on such of the product as may be in Live Oak County on January 1 of the year, I take it.
That's correct. If it's in Live Oak County, it's at its ultimate destination.
Then you go on to say that plaintiff did not protest the situs in Texas at which the property is taxed. What does that mean? That sounds to me saying you don't protest in Athens County, but that's contrary to all of the arguments.
Well, Your Honor, we made two stipulations as to this oil. One, we stipulated we didn't contest the market value placed on it. And secondly, we stipulated we didn't contest situs. But situs is a totally different issue. All we said there was, if this is taxable in Texas anywhere, as far as between us and Nueces County, we agree it would be taxable here and not somewhere else. So we could focus on the single issue of whether or not it's taxable at all.
Taxable anywhere in Texas.
Yes, Your Honor.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Russell R. Graham will put that argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, I'm Russell Graham. I'm having the Oasis County President's Review Board. With me today is one of my partners, Peter Lowe. This is the first case in my career where the research went all the way back before the United States Constitution was written. And in the Michelin case, you find out why. In that case, the majority discusses the reason for the Constitutional Convention of 1787. And one of the compelling reasons for that Constitutional Convention was the fact that under the Articles of Confederation, the various states were free to impose on other states for goods moving in foreign commerce whatever duties and imposed they could get away with it, whatever the market would bear. And the result of that was that states with good ports, like New York, South Carolina, were able to pass on the cost of their government by levying duties on goods coming from other states to be exported and on goods coming from foreign nations destined for those other states. Second reason for the Constitutional Convention was that there was no secure source of revenue for the federal government. And the result of that was the Commerce Clause and the Import-Export Clause, which govern the outcome of this case. And I think you have to look at the reasons for those two clauses to understand the position taken by Nueces County. I think Chief Justice Phillips hit the head on the nail on the head when he asked, why would the federal government care who taxes this oil? Our answer is, they don't. The federal government's concerns are not reached by the tax in question in this case.
Are you saying that you agree with the concurring opinion rather than the plurality court opinion at the Court of Appeals?
I think the concurring opinion is perhaps more concise. I think the plurality opinion is more detailed and, in fact, responds to all of the issues that Diamond Shamrock has raised. If you look at the Michelin case, the case talks about, you quote James Madison, in the preface to the Constitutional Convention, he talks about states like New Jersey being described as a keg capital at both ends because New Jersey had no port. On one end was the port of New York, and on the other end was Philadelphia. And Pennsylvania and New York literally raped New Jersey by imposing their taxes. When the Import-Export Clause was written, as pointed out by the Court of Michelin, it had three purposes. The first was to secure to the government, the federal government, a secure source of revenue. In other words, to allow the federal government and only the federal government to collect revenues from imposts and duties. Second reason was to allow the federal government to speak with one voice to foreign nations. In other words, not to let each state impose whatever it can get away with on imports and exports. And the third reason is the one at issue in this case, in my view. The third reason was to protect inland states from duties imposed on products merely moving through the seaboard states. In other words, to prevent those seaboard states from passing on the cost of their governments in the form of imposing duties on goods simply moving through. That's not what we have in this case. The court in Michelin, and I think one of the difficulties of this case is...
Counselor, we say we don't have it because we don't have two states involved, but we still have the issue of whether or not it's entrenched, don't we? And isn't that the exception that was made in the federal statute?
Well, there's no federal statute, but case law, Michelin, does leave an exception. What it says specifically is that goods that are merely passing through a state may not be taxed. And that, once again, is not what we have here. The court talks about what property taxes are all about, and the court says that those taxes are designed to distribute the cost of government to people owning property within the state. And the court says that that is a fair levy even on imported goods. What it then goes on to say is there's no reason why local taxpayers should subsidize the services used by the importer. Ultimate consumers should pay for such services as police and fire protection, imported goods just as much as they should pay transportation costs associated. The evil to be prevented, and this is the key, evil to be prevented by the Import-Export Clause was levying of taxes which could only be imposed because of the peculiar geographic situation of certain states that enabled them to single out goods destined for other states.
Is there authority for the proposition that transitory goods lose their transitory character when they enter the state of open destination?
I think the point there is that you have to look and see whether the tax violates the purpose of the Import-Export Clause or the Commerce Clause. If it doesn't violate it, then the fact that the property is still in movement.
First of all, is there a fault?
I think there is.
What is
it? I think it's Michelin. The last sentence in that paragraph says, a non-discriminatory discriminatory ad valorem property tax obviously stands on a different footing, and to the extent there's any conflict whatsoever with the purpose of the clause, it may be secured merely by prohibiting assessment of even non-discriminatory property taxes on goods which are merely in transit through the state. We don't have that situation here. These goods are not in transit through the state. Texas is the state.
So your answer to Judge Heck is that if it's not going out of the state, then when it arrives at the ultimate state of its destination, then it's no longer in transit.
That's my view.
But you only get that from Michigan by arguing what it doesn't say.
We get that from Michigan by saying what was the purpose of the clause in the first place. And if the purpose
Michigan
of the clause...
Michigan doesn't say that transitory goods lose their transitory taxes when they enter the state of ultimate destination.
No, but what it does say is that they're prohibiting taxes on goods which are merely in transit through the state. Now, I can't read that to mean that once they're in the state of destination, they still carry this automatic immunity. And there is no purpose behind it. The import-export clause serves by granting that immunity. There are no citizens of inland states who are going to be imposed upon by the property tax levy here. And one of the stipulations that was not mentioned by opposing counsel was the stipulation that there is a continuous volume of oil present in Corpus Christi. Justice Hightower, you asked, you know, could it be there 6 months? Well, in fact, there's oil there all year. Stipulations indicate that what's there on January 1 is just part of a continuous presence of oil in Corpus Christi. It is true that any given barrel doesn't stay there very long, but there is always oil owned by Diamond Shamrock in Corpus Christi. And it's also stipulated that that oil is provided services by the taxing units in Nueces County, police, fire protection, port work, that sort of thing. That is exactly what the Supreme Court of Michigan was talking about, that taxes, property taxes, are designed to pay for the services received, even by the importer. If you don't tax this oil, what we have is a situation where identical oil coming from the same source at the same speed and in the same volume will pay taxes. We got five refineries in Nueces County, and under the Youngstown rule, all of the other refineries have on-site storage. The oil comes in off the ship, it is put in tanks at their refinery, and it's automatically taxable. Those refiners receiving the same kind of oil at the same pace will pay taxes necessary to provide public services to Diamond Shamrock. And under Diamond Shamrock's theory, even if their refinery was located 1 mile from Harbor Island, and there was no storage capacity whatsoever at that refinery, under their theory of the law, there would be no tax on any inventory, because it wouldn't be taxable until it reached its final destination, and obviously if there's no on-site storage, it would be consumed as soon as it got there in the refining process. So they could design a scheme of locating their facility just a mile away or a half mile away and avoid any tax whatsoever on their inventory, even though they have a huge volume of that inventory present throughout the year, even though it receives services.
Graham, but under your theory, the potential problem, Walmart is shipping their inventory across Nueces County. Under your theory, if the ultimate destination is in Texas, that if you could catch any of their trailers on the back of their tractors driving through Nueces County on January 1st, you could tax it.
Justice Zinnick, that's not our theory. In our brief, we can see that if this were an incidental.
But did you not stipulate that this oil was in transit?
We stipulated that it was being held in those tanks to allow transshipment through the pipeline. Saying that it's in movement, and we admit it's in movement, that's different from saying that legally it's in transit, as that term is used by the court, by the Supreme Court under the import-export test.
So you're saying the stipulation wasn't that it was in transit, it was just kind of in movement?
It is in continuous movement. They put it in those tanks, and they put it in the pipeline, which coincidentally has the same capacity as the refinery does, 50,000 barrels a day, and they move it to the refinery.
The facts of the case appear to be they're storing it at these tanks until they can be refined, and it looks like off-site warehousing. But the stipulation is that this oil is in movement through Nueces County to an ultimate destination. If you say, as you do, that the Commerce Clause doesn't care about where you tax it, it's only if you get it to Texas, then Texas, any taxing authority in Texas can do whatever they want to as long as the oil is only destined for Texas. If that's your position, then I go to the next step. If that's your position, can Nueces County take the position that if we've got taxable property transit through our county and we catch it on January 1st, we can tax it? How do you distinguish oil going through a pipeline and in a storage tank in Nueces County that can be taxed from other taxable property that's just moving through the county on January 1st?
Well, there are several tests that have to be met by a tax on goods moving in commerce. The interstate commerce test set forth in the Fleet-Auto case requires four components. First, the tax applied to an activity with a substantial nexus with the taxing state or the taxing jurisdiction. What that means is you've got to have something more than just an incidental contact with the taxing entity. For example, the Quill case that has been cited, the U.S. Supreme Court held that you couldn't levy a sales tax on mail order sales if that was the only contact that the seller had with the state was through the mails and common carriers. On the other hand, in the National Geographic case, the Supreme Court held that California can impose a sales tax on National Geographic because they have two little offices there to sell advertising. And the advertising offices had nothing to do with the sales of the magazine. But the court upheld that there was a substantial enough connection with the tax and the tax entity. The second portion of that test is it's got to be fairly apportioned. And this is crucial to our theory. Our theory basically is that if there's a continuous presence of property receiving governmental services, then we ought to be entitled to recover some taxes from that property. But the whole purpose of the Commerce Clause is, and the Supreme Court set out its real function in commerce questions as being a defense. The Supreme Court says our goal in a commerce case is to be a defense against a tax which raises the specter of double taxation, and which under the theory of the tax collects revenue that belongs of right to another jurisdiction. So when you've got a case like you're talking about where property moves casually through or incidentally through Nueces County, we can see in our brief that we couldn't tax that property. We could not prove that there was a substantial nexus with the jurisdiction. We'd have difficulty proving that it was fairly portion between Nueces County and other jurisdictions. There's a third prong, which I don't think arises in this case. The third prong under Complete Auto is that the tax doesn't discriminate against interstate commerce. All of the cases say that property taxes don't violate that rule. And then the fourth test would be the key in your question. Is it fairly related to services provided by the jurisdiction? We can see that if a one-time shipment of the property happened to be in Corpus Christi on January 1, but only there for a few hours or a few days, that we would have difficulty proving that the tax imposed fairly related to the services provided. But that's not what we have in this case. We are providing services all year long. Justice Gammon, you mentioned that the tax is on one day. That's correct. But that tax levied on one day pays for services throughout the year. And this property, as the stipulations show, is part of a continuous process, and it is receiving services. I mean, that's stipulated to
Are you saying that if Live Oak County also levied a property tax on January 1 on the oil that was there, which I think, according to the record, is going to be about a third of the oil that's in Nueces County, that there would be the possibility of a violation of number two, fairly apportioned, that would violate the Commerce Clause?
Not really. I think that would be a status dispute for the Texas courts to deal with. You don't only get taxed once within Texas. And it would be a
dispute. That's under not only Texas due process law, due course law, but also under federal Commerce Clause.
That's exactly right. If you're dealing with a dispute between competing taxing units within the same state, then it is a matter for the status laws of that state to deal with, not a matter of due process under federal law.
Graham, I'm sorry. You mentioned that the fairly related service provider was the fourth element, but I only counted, I only have three. I've got the continuous presence, fairly apportioned, and then...
Does not discriminate against interstate commerce.
Okay, thank you.
And as I said, all cases indicate that a non-discriminatory property tax meets that prong of the test.
The appraisal district did not argue the Commerce Clause until the reply brief before the appeal, is that correct?
No, I don't think it is correct.
It was argued in the initial brief?
We cited Fleet Auto and all of the key commerce cases. Our point of error, the judgment of the trial court simply said that the oil owned by Diamond Shamrock was exempt from taxation. Our point of error was an all-encompassing point of error that the trial court erred in holding the property exempt from taxation.
But your contention is by arguing cases that involve Commerce Clause arguments, you have in essence raised those arguments in your first brief in the court.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. That there is some confusion raised because there were conclusions of law and binding fact entered in this case. But they're meaningless in this case because this was an agreed case under the rules. And the precedents clearly indicate that the only thing that's important to the record in an agreed case are the stipulations and the judgment. And the judgment simply says the property is exempt. My point of error said that's wrong. I don't know how I should get any clearer. My brief basically says under state law, this property is clearly taxable because under our Constitution, all property situated in this state on January 1 is subject to taxation. And then I went on to say, and under federal law, there is no way that it's exempt. And that was the whole point of my point of error, and that's the whole point of my first brief. Frankly, I think that issue is one of semantics, and I never have really understood it.
But if a party had not raised Commerce Clause in an initial brief, certainly you could not do so in a reply.
Well, I'm not even sure about that, Your Honor, because if the trial court had held that the property was exempt as a matter of law under the Commerce Clause, that is an issue that the Court of Appeals can review on its own, a conclusion of law.
But the party has to raise it.
No, the Court of Appeals, if I argue the property is not exempt, and I don't give the court the right case, and the court finds its own case holding that, the issue is still viable. I don't know how you get a much broader point of error than the one I had, which was the trial court erred in holding the property was exempt from taxation. And that's all the judgment says.
Mr. Graham, I'm not sure. Let's go back to that stipulation again. I understood from the counsel on the other side that you had stipulated that the oil was in transit. That was part of the stipulation. And then I understand from you that the stipulation was that it was in movement. Exactly what was the stipulation?
The stipulation reads, the presence of the crude oil within the Oasis County appraisal ship while in transit to its ultimate destination is reasonably necessary for accommodation of transportation of crude oil to pipelines.
So you stipulate, that is the stipulation.
I stipulate that this oil has been in movement all this time. And I think then it comes down to whether being part of the original trip to its final destination is significant under federal law. And my answer is no, because the only protections afforded here under the Commerce Clause and the Import-Export Clause were not designed to be protections for Diamond Shamrock. The Import-Export Clause and the Commerce Clause were designed to be a shield for commerce, not particular properties. And unless we have impeded commerce by the imposition of this tax, it should not be set aside. The Import-Export Clause, in its primary purpose described in Michelin, was to protect the citizens of inland states from an undue burden imposed by seaboard states.
Would your position be the same if you were here today representing Jefferson County Appraisal District and the oil had come in down to Jefferson County and going to go to Three Rivers, which is considerably further away?
I think it would be if it was always present there and if Jefferson County had to provide its services on a regular basis. I think where the Supreme Court will go, even in the interstate commerce area, and I don't frankly believe there's an interstate commerce issue in this case, but I think eventually the Supreme Court will reach the conclusion that if you can show your tax is fairly connected to the service you provide, your tax will stand. And given today's attitude of commerce, or form of commerce, it is not uncommon for a local government like Harris County to have to provide continuing regular services to people who use Harris County, that in effect is a distribution point. Goods come in by barge or by boat. General Motors, for example, maintains several thousand vehicles in Harris County. They are still in movement to their final destination, which is some dealership somewhere. But Harris County has to provide services to them. And I think even under the interstate commerce provisions, that eventually the Supreme Court is going to reach the position that a government that provides those services on a regular basis and where the property has a continuous presence is allowed to recoup the cost of its government services. But it's particularly true in this case, where this oil is not destined for another state. There is no provision of the Import, Export, or Commerce Clause impinged by this tax. This tax, those clauses were not designed to be a sword held by Diamond Shamrock.
Counsel, your time has expired.
Holding us
if you're answering the question, it sounded like it was beyond that to me. Are there any other questions for Mr. Graham? Thank you, Counsel.
Counsel, does the position that you are advocating mean that Diamond Shamrock will continue to get services that it doesn't pay for in the West County?
Your Honor, it's part of our contention that those services are paid for by FEMA. In the property tax they pay, if Diamond Shamrock didn't have oil going through there, those tanks would be of no use to anyone. So it's really not a fair statement to say that the services provided by New Orleans County appraisal, well, taxing units within the appraisal district are not paid for. I think Mr. Graham hit the nail on the head in his last 2 minutes when he said it was his opinion that eventually, and I wrote it down, the Supreme Court will reach the conclusion that this is taxable. The point today is they haven't reached that conclusion. The conclusion is exactly the opposite. As a matter of fact, they went out of their way initially to specifically point out at three different occasions that the holding they were making excluded in-transit goods. And if there was ever a question about it, the Supreme Court in the Reynolds case decided in 1986 at page 514 stated, this court has observed that in Michelin, it limited its holding to imported goods no longer in transit. And in that case, it was citing it itself, and another case decided after Michelin, the Washington Stevedore case, whereby the Supreme Court held that a direct tax on goods would be prohibited while a tax on the stevedoring activities was okay.
Mr. Clear, the stipulation about the oil being in movement is the key to your case, is it not?
If these goods are not in transit, Your Honor, they're not exempt from taxation. And the stipulation couldn't be any clearer. It says they're in transit. I mean, this is the first time I've ever heard an argument that something moving is actually standing still. Usually the argument's the reverse as well.
But for that stipulation, there's no question that this oil is being held here until it can be processed. Isn't that true?
Well, I wouldn't say that, Judge. I don't know what it was. I don't know what the facts would be if the stipulation wasn't there. I can't agree with the court that that's what the result would be. What I would say that if we tried this case with a jury, the facts would come out exactly the same, that this oil is being stopped there incident to its transportation to Three Rivers Refinery. But the stipulation is clear.
But if to run that refinery requires 600,000 barrels of oil and on site only stores 200,000 barrels of oil, it could only lead to one conclusion that 400,000 barrels of oil is being stored someplace else.
Well, it's located somewhere else. Now, whether it's stored or not, once again, is a different issue. Judge, if there were no tanks at all and just this long pipeline running in there, at some point, 1,000 miles away, you're going to have oil moving that is going to ultimately be in that pipeline.
True.
I think, Judge, you hit on really the key point in your question about Walmart. Their argument is that goods that have entered the state of ultimate destination are no longer in transit. It doesn't matter if it's one shipment or a continuous presence. Either the law is that they're no longer in transit when they reach the state of ultimate destination or not, whether it's one truckload of Walmart goods or hundreds. And our position is that when you look at the undisputed law of the Supreme Court and this court interpreting Michelin, that until this oil gets to the refinery, based on the stipulation, they agreed to it, the judge signed off on it, the only people that kind of ignored it was the Court of Appeals in error. This oil is exempt from taxation. And just for a moment, I'd like to discuss the point raised by Judge Heck on point of error number one. While the issue of the question of this import-export exemption is of ultimate importance, the question of whether or not an appellant in a reply brief can raise for the first time a point of error, or excuse me, an argument, is of ultimate importance as well. And despite what counsel has said, it's clear in the reading of their brief, appellant's brief, that while they referred to complete auto, it was in the context of the import-export clause. And the Court of Appeals even recognized the fact when it held without authority that for the first time you can raise a point in reply. I mean, the mass confusion that would be created by that precedent of permitting new arguments to be created as time goes on, the confusion to the courts and to the parties, it's just hard. It's hard to imagine. And that's why this court and other courts of appeal have held without contradiction that points not briefed are waived. Your Honor, this argument really is focused a sharp contrast between the issues asserted and, more importantly, the authorities relied on by the parties. What Diamond Shamrock is seeking is not to avoid taxes, but simply to be permitted the protection of the United States Constitution. The district primarily relies on a view of Michelin that has been repudiated, if it was ever accepted, by cases such as Reynolds, and also relies on dissenting opinions and a student article written by Vanderbilt Law Review. By contrast, Diamond Shamrock relies on the authorities of the United States Supreme Court, which are uncontradicted, this court, and even the Fifth Circuit opinion in the Pilot Petroleum case decided in 1990, where they specifically held that the import-export clause still protected goods in transit. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Thank you. I have one question for Mr. Graham before we take our recess. On October 8th of last year, you filed a motion to postpone oral argument in the event that the court might grant this case until January, or until sometime in 1994 because of other commitments you had in 1993. Had we granted this case in early October, it would have been set in December of 1993. At the time you filed that motion, you have two other cases pending up here, Baptist Memorial Geriatric Center and Port Neches Independent School District versus FINA, and you didn't file a similar motion in those cases. And I'm curious as to why.
Your Honor, I felt that my co-counsel on those cases, Mr. Lowe, was capable of arguing them in the event that they were scheduled.
So you
this case is one where I have written all the briefs and tried the case from day one. And
we're not to take that as a confession that this case, your position had more substantial problems than the other cases.
I don't think so, Your Honor. Fact of the matter was I had a long planned vacation, went trout fishing in New Zealand.
The timing of this motion was somewhat curious to us. Can you state that you did not file this motion based on any information that you heard about the court's likely resolution of the application for writ of error?
No, Your Honor. I just knew I wanted to go fishing in New Zealand.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first clause, and the court will now take a brief recess.